With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 37 of the AI Comic Pod, brought to you as always by the Anfield Index. My name's Stuart Bridson. Thanks for listening to us. We're going to be doing a review of the recently released Marvel Netflix Iron Fist series. I've actually got a bit of a special one today. I've got two co-hosts with me. One of them is very small, his breath smells a bit, and he's constantly licking himself. And my dog Wilson's here as well. So I may as well bring in Rory. How are you doing this evening?
Yeah, I'm speechless. It's the only thing you've actually prepared on the whole entire podcast for over a year.
And since day one, yeah, basically.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll take the humiliation for your actual prepared nature on this podcast. I'm good. Yeah, it's good to be back, man. It's been a while, so...
Yeah, you've not been on for fucking ages.
I have been on... I was on the last one, wasn't I?
I don't know. I've just lost track.
Logan. We did a big Logan podcast. I was on that. Yeah, that was a mammoth.
I don't even remember. I'm just used to not being here anymore.
Oh, no, it's good, man. Logan was good for us, and people gave great feedback. I just want to say thank you for all the feedback and all the listens. And it opened a few new avenues, I'd say. It was a very different topic for us in terms of, it's a different type of film, believe it or not. I know it's a comic film, but it's very different. So yeah, no, it was good. And yeah, it's nice to be back talking TV and doing a bit of news and some other things. It's been a big few weeks for the kind of genre.
Just before we jump into that little news section, because there has been a few things that we wanted to go over, our last guest, he's not actually been on for a year, which is criminal. But he's been too busy with like a real world life and actual people rather than, you know, podcasts and comics. You know him as 433 Chris, but to save being weirdly awkward, we're just going to call him Chris. So good evening, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. And you guys? It's been a while, eh?
It has. It's been far too long. I knew it had been a while, but I didn't think it had been a year. So slap on the wrist for us, because we need to try harder to bring our friends in on this.
But luckily we got Guardians of the Galaxy coming up, so...
Yes.
I might be on soon again.
Yes, you will. We always do try and do, as you all know, we always try and do a preview of the big films and then a review afterwards, and Chris is our resident Guardians expert, so he's going to hopefully be doing the preview and the review, so we should be on three in a row, which is good. Ooh. You don't get to take the match ball home for that kind of hat trick. You might get to take Rory home,
come on.
But that's up to
him. I'll go to Cape Town for a while, man. That's the fine. I'll take that invitation any day of the week.
The deal is, though, Chris, you don't pay for his airfare.
I'll just say, I know we're not really covering it, but a little bit of early Guardians buzz is there was a screening yesterday for the kind of critics in the States, and it sounds very positive, as I think we all expected it to be, really. I don't think we thought James got it wrong, but it sounds great, sounds really kind of similar to the first in its approach, but apparently quite sentimental, which is quite surprising, quite emotional, which I didn't see happening, which is good. And then there are five, not one, not two, but not three or four, but five post-credit scenes.
See, I've read different things. I've read a report that said there was two. Then I saw one that said there was four. Then I saw one that said there was five.
So well, James Gunn confirmed five. So right, I think after all the false ones, I think it is five, which is mental. There's a lot to come.
So the film's going to finish. Then there's going to be a post-credit scene. Then they're going to do the brief ones where they show like the main headliners. Then there's going to be another one. That's going to. Yeah. But that's good because that's going to make it worthwhile sitting for those 15 minutes. After the film, because it does get a bit annoying, doesn't it?
It does get a bit tedious, I'll be honest. That when you sat there and waiting for things to come, and it's just taking forever. But the Doctor Strange ones, I remember being particularly long. I felt like it was a massive drag.
Also, who else waited on Logan for napping?
I didn't, because I'd read that there wasn't. Before I went in, I read loads of things, and people were saying, "Don't waste your time. I promise you, there's nothing."
Yeah, it's kind of, I know it's obviously Marvel, but it's Fox, and it's a little bit different
in terms of what they're doing. Not their shtick, is it?
No.
And I suppose at the end of that movie, there wasn't really room for...
No.
No, exactly.
And anything they did would have ruined the poignancy of the end. Even if it was literally just the final shot.
Deadpool 2-1 would have been a little bit awkward. I would say as well, James Gunn confirmed to do the third Guardians film, which is going to happen. So that's positive.
It's no surprise, though, is it? The best thing about it was the announcement, the way he said it. He speaks of his love of the characters that he's like created and cultivated, and he's writing it and directing it. So it's not that I remember reading something a while ago saying that people were worried that he might have been burned out. And he might have either written it but not directed, or directed it but not written. So it's good to see that he's not taken any kind of a step back.
But Rory was just saying that the early screenings have been good news. I suppose him being confirmed for Volume 3 is also a good sign for Volume 2.
Yeah, absolutely. He must be. He obviously signed on for Volume 2 because he was so happy with how the first one went. He wouldn't sign on for the third one if there'd been any kind of problems, whether it was acting or casting or producing or effects, or everything seems to have gone wonderfully. Otherwise, why confirm the third film when the second film's not even being released?
Yeah, and it feels like quite a smooth shoot, you know, because certain films you hear about X, Y, and Z, and I think Marvel, as a rule, kind of keep things quite locked up. So maybe there is, you know, obviously the Edgar Wright stuff scene or whatever kind of came to the fore, really. But it seems like it's been pretty smooth, and they're all happy on set, and everyone seems to like look working like with each other.
They look like the biggest group of friends ever, because they're all putting up behind the scenes things right back to the first time Zoe Saldana puts the makeup on, and that every few days throughout the whole process, there's a photo or a little video, and all they ever seem to be doing is having a laugh or sitting down and talking. And, you know, whenever you see a video of James Gunn, he always looks like he's having a laugh, and he looks like such a nice guy to work with. So that can only be a good thing. We'll obviously put a lot more effort into Guardians when we do the preview.
Exactly. The other bit of news I don't think you were going to mention that's probably worth talking about briefly is that Deadpool 2's got a little bit more casting.
I forgot that I missed that one off. That's a big piece. I mean, Cable was... for a long time.
Well, we talked about Cable a little bit, didn't we?
It looked like the front runners. Everyone wanted Ron Perlman, but he looked like he was a bit old. Then there was Stephen Lang.
It was never going to happen.
And I think Stephen Lang would have been perfect. And then it looked strangely like it was going to be David Harbour, the guy that played the police
Stranger
guy in Stranger Things. And I thought that was a bit of a weird one.
Well, yeah, but then actually, if you look at it, he's not that dissimilar from Brolin, really, in terms of his look and his style.
He's got the build, but I think it's fair to say Josh Brolin looks like another hat-off moment. When you start seeing the fan art mock-ups of him, it just looks brilliant. He's got the right shaped face. He's obviously quite stocky. He's got to be tall because he's got to be taller.
He's a big guy. Ryan Reynolds,
I think, is 6 foot.
So I don't know. I mean, it's hard to go back to it, but if you ever go back to like childhood memories, so Brolin was obviously in the Goonies originally.
Yeah.
And he looked like a giant in that. He hadn't really filled out at that stage. I know he's surrounded by, you know, younger children, but he's gone on to do some, I mean, brilliant films. He obviously casted Thanos as well. So it's not going to have an impact because he's going to be very CGI based in that. And it's a very different kind of role, but yeah, I think he's good. Any of his Coen Brothers stuff, No Country for Old Men, all that kind of stuff. He's quite dark actor, so it's interesting. He's funny. He's known to be funny and good timing, so I think he's going to work. But he's quite intense, so it'll be interesting.
Yeah, that is one. You're right. I'd forgotten that off my list. We've also had there's been the first proper trailer for Thor Ragnarok has come out.
Oh my god!
It looks amazing. Oh. It looks
as
like
Guardians of the Galaxy as we know.
Yeah, it really does look like James Gunn has had his hands all over that, but he doesn't seem to have. But they've obviously learned a lesson from two bone dry Thor films that were pretty poorly
received.
Well,
the first one, the first one, like we've said, has got some merits. It kind of didn't quite get it. But the second one's, quite unanimously. The poorest film in recent years in Marvel.
Well,
so
it's the poorest out of the MCU other than Hulk, which is like the ginger stepchild. We don't talk about Hulk.
don't ever acknowledge.
It's terrible.
The trailer looks like on point. I think the casting looks genius.
Cate Blanchett looks fucking incredible as hella.
She looks amazing. And Jeff Goldblum, albeit probably quite a small part, he's just so good for that kind of role. He's so charismatic.
But you know,
it's kind of, it looks like Star Wars meets Guardians. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's quite different. And it's just going to be fun. And I think the big thing, the director, is a bit of an unknown. He's a Kiwi director. And he did a film last year that's kind of the indie film of the year, which is A Hunt for the Wilder People. And it's a really good film. I do recommend it, but it's really kind of out there. It's a comedy, but it's quite out there. And him going from that to a huge Marvel film is quite a big risk again. But because he's got that background and he's going to bring that kind of lightness of touch to it, which I think Thor has needed all along, I think it just could be match made in heaven, really.
The director has got a background in comedy as well.
Yeah, and he's comedy.
You can see that coming through. So they've obviously learned from previous criticism, but also previous praises of the likes of Guardians.
And
it's comedy in the right way.
Our friend Marco on Twitter,
I wouldn't say friend.
Mentioned that.
associate.
Well, he's a fellow South African, so I have to say friend.
Oh, okay.
He can find me, and then you know. he is Portuguese.
Yeah.
But he mentioned that Marvel learned from the Robert Downey Jr. and Iron Man sort of making Iron Man his own, that they giving Hemsworth some creative license with Thor and sort of adding that dry humor to the role.
Which he's very good at.
He's shown that in other film roles, but he's also shown it in Avengers and things like that. So they didn't really get it right in the Thor films, did they?
He's never really had the chance to show his comedy chops, and he has got good timing. You know, Robert Downey Jr.'s comedy timing is literally nanosecond perfection. Hemsworth's pretty good. You know, we can deliver a line. You've only got to look. If you ask people about the trailer, everyone's favourite thing is the "we're friends from work." You know, that's cracked everyone up. But the way he delivers it, the look on his face, it's going to
I think
rule.
That's more of it. I think that's more that gets it. I mean, the line is quite good. But if he didn't deliver it in that way, you'd probably think it's a bit of a shit line. But actually, the way he delivers it, it's just genius because I think
it's one of those jokes that can come off and also fall flat on its face.
Oh, it could have fallen
and
so
he did it
flat.
Perfectly.
Yeah, it could have fallen so flat. And yeah, I kind of like the whole look they're going for in terms of they needed to change things up a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Things became a little bit stale, especially in the first two films. So if they go out with a bang and it ends the way it should end as a trilogy, hopefully we get the best film of the lot by distance, really.
Well, it's looking like we're probably going to get the best Thor, Wolverine, and Spider-Man films all in the same year, which is going to be pretty good. We've also had a trailer dropped for new Star Wars film, which is always worth mentioning because we all love Star Wars.
Yeah, we do.
Oh my God.
It looks ridiculous. I don't want to put too much time in it because we will probably... We won't be doing a Star Wars.
That'll be a movie night. Unfortunately, it'll be a movie night. They cover the Star Wars stuff so well. So. Yeah. But yeah, man, I mean, it looks great.
We can just start stoking the fire for them, can't we, a few months early?
Yeah, I'm one of those that's a little bit... Rogue One didn't quite do it for me, being honest.
Boo.
It didn't really start. It didn't really start until about an hour and a quarter in. You know, nothing really happened.
I'm not saying boo, Ernst. I'm saying boo.
And I'm actually afraid to admit that I actually fell asleep once or twice watching.
Exactly.
Excuse me.
Nothing happened until they got to the Maldives. Yeah, nothing happened.
I'm going
to
get more sense out of the dog than you two.
Don't be blind. Don't follow the sheep, man.
I like sheep. They taste delicious with mint sauce.
That's true.
Last thing we were going to do in the news. Joss Whedon being confirmed as the director. I can't remember if you've already mentioned this.
Do you know what? I don't think we did. We've talked about it quite a bit on what's happened and whatever else.
I know me and Joey have, because me and Joey talk about literally everything that happens in the comic world.
I'm not sure about it. Is it definitely 100% confirmed, or is it still...
No, as far as I saw, it's being confirmed. He's writing and directing, and the major thing to take from that is that Joss Whedon brought one of the best female superheroes of all time, you know, into everyone's lives, and that's Buffy.
Yeah.
Buffy was a fucking incredible season, still one of the best, whether you want to call it comic or sci-fi or whatever you'd class it as. It's one of the best shows of its type ever.
Have you seen Serenity? Because we've talked about that. And obviously it's a sci-fi film, and it's following on from Firefly and all that jazz. But I thought then when he did that, you could see he could direct a film, obviously, because it's different from directing a TV show. But to go on and do Avengers the way he did, and I think I was probably a little bit harsh on Age of Ultron. I think it just didn't quite live up to the billing. I think he was harsh on himself as well. You know, we talked about this a lot.
It's a difficult second film, isn't it? It's always hard when you've got a film that made such an impact as the Avengers did. Anything that comes after it is going to be a little bit sort of frowned upon because his hands were
probably a little bit tied, not too much creatively, but in terms of where the story had to go. Do you know what I mean? Because he's the one that
was one of his criticisms. I think he's alluded to that they were sort of funneled in a certain direction to make certain things happen, because obviously that film was a gateway to everything that's now happening in phase three and will happen in phase four. Whereas the Avengers was the opposite. It was the end. It was the culmination of the previous 4 or 5 years.
But what we praised in like Deadpool and Logan, for instance, is that kind of creative license for the directors. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I think James Gunn had that in Guardians. And I think he'll have it in Guardians 2 as well, because it's not quite tied in the same. But then you look at the Russo brothers and they absolutely nailed Civil War. So it can be done. It's a challenge, and it's going to be interesting with Infinity Wars, the way it kind of goes with our directors and whether they absolutely nail it, which I think everyone expects them to. But yeah, that's the big news, man. But there was a lot of stuff to talk about lately.
Yeah.
It's been a big few weeks on this kind of genre. It seems like all the kind of conventions and stuff kind of creeping around, so you're getting more and more talk about stuff.
Well, I mean, it's not that long since we had the first Spider-Man trailer as well, so we're probably going to be getting another Guardians trailer and another Spider-Man trailer in the next couple of months, and then not long after that we'll be getting... We've had more Wonder Woman stuff,
and we've had a bit of Justice League, and I mean, yeah, there's been a lot lately. It's going to be a big year. It's a busy year. They are cramming in as much as they can cram in. So, and that said, obviously we're here to talk about Iron Fist, which I think you have mentioned. But I mean, there's all kind of talks of that stuff as well. I mean, the Punisher's wrapped, as you finally posted on our Twitter site, and then Defenders is
teaser.
Out. So, is it a teaser, but it comes out in June, doesn't it? Or July and August?
Defenders,
I can't remember.
Defenders is out soon. It was, I can't remember.
Earlier than expected.
Yeah, we thought it was going to be the end of the year, but I think they're conscious of releasing it too late. Because that's when they're going to be going up against the big
film. August now or something. Yeah, I think it's August or something. It was earlier than I expected. And then you've got Punisher and probably second series of Jessica Jones, which sounds like it's on the horizon this year.
Yeah.
And then Daredevil maybe early next year. So there's a lot going on. I mean, it's, yeah, lots to talk about. But Iron Fist is what we're here to really...
Defenders is going live in August the 18th.
Yeah, nice.
So I think it was Finn Jones, the guy that was cast... somewhat controversially, which we'll cover, as Danny Rand, aka the Iron Fist, and he said literally as soon as they finished shooting Iron Fist, they started shooting Defenders. And I think Charlie Cox said something similar, that everyone was already together, and a lot of it is the same crew. So it was a case of, well, while we're all here, let's get the few missing people together and let's just do this, rather than film, disband, then come back together and then disband again. It's easy to just do it back to back. So that some of those, the cast and the crew have had a really hard few months, because it's quite grueling at times, especially on the more physical actors. So if we start right back at the beginning, Iron Fist is obviously the final piece of the Defenders puzzle. We've had two seasons of Daredevil, both immaculately received. We've had Jessica Jones, which got fairly positive, but still some complaints and mixed reviews. Luke Cage, probably a bit more positive than Jessica Jones, but not on the standard of Daredevil. So we're missing Iron Fist. He's introducing a more magical element. We've got the training, we've got the superpowers that come from a serum, we've got sort of more normal superheroes. Now we start bringing in the mystical side of things, the weird shit. If we go to Chris first, because I just want to make sure that you're awake, because I know Rory and I are blathering like we tend to.
I'm still here.
How did you, before it started, how excited were you for the show?
Next to Daredevil, Iron Fist was probably the one I was most excited for.
Same as me. If I were to rank the Defenders, I would say Daredevil, then Iron Fist.
Yeah, I was super excited to see how they were going to pull it off, like the mystical powers like you mentioned, and the mask. I know you mentioned on Twitter you wanted to see that mask so bad.
I did.
And I was actually disappointed we didn't get to see it in the final episode, but hopefully somewhere down the line I'll get to do it.
They've said it won't be the Defenders. Charlie Cox did an interview where he mentioned that he's the only one. I put it on our Twitter account, I think, or
with
on Facebook.
Mask, yeah.
And he said because he's the only one that's wearing a mask, he's kind of got the easiest job when it comes to stunts, because everybody else's faces are exposed.
Yeah.
They've got to do more of the stunt work because it's harder to swap them out. And I think a lot of people hearing that went, because we did see the Iron Fist suit, didn't we? But it obviously wasn't Danny Rand. It was in that old footage that was unearthed.
Yeah. I think they'll probably do the costume when he like fully realizes or accepts that he is the Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Because the big thing, theme of this first season for me was sort of his struggle with who he is, what the Iron Fist means, and like his obviously struggle with his parents' death, and then like the Meachums and all of his stuff going on. It was a bit all over the place, and he was, as a result, but all over the place was like... So it was a bit disjointed for me in that sense. Like it was like pulling on a lot of different threads. But I think like once that comes together, like towards the end of the season, you could see he was starting to become more like Iron Fist. And I think in season two, when they sort of find out what happened to Conlon and all of that, I think he's going to grow into that Iron Fist role a bit more.
Yeah, I completely agree. So what about you, Rory? How were you feeling before it started up?
I hadn't kind of had any major contact with the comics, so it wasn't something I was massively looking forward to. But I think in the sense that how well they'd done all the other things on, you know, the Marvel Netflix shows, I obviously had a decent amount of anticipation that it'd be good. And just kind of your hype about it and the character and what he brings, because I think he's almost quite an archetypal staple in the comic world, in his, you know, tragedy with his parents. That's quite a common reoccurrence with a comic book character. You know, difficulty facing up to his past and you know, kind of locking his emotions away and you know, taken out in terms of other areas. It's, you know, there's are links with other, you know, and that's what comics does, and that's, they all take their inspiration from similar kind of ways and means and stuff. So I was, you know, more excited than Luke Cage, certainly, and Jessica Jones. Daredevil for me, I thought had the potential to be great, and it has been, which is great. But I was a little bit tentative, but I did think with the mystic element, and I think, you know, certain aspects of Doctor Strange kind of laid the foundations with what we're expecting to see. And I think on the most part, actually, that was fairly sound in the series. I thought they really did get across those elements quite well. I think, like Chris mentioned, I think it is a bit muddled at times in terms of, as an actor trying to portray the character at times, I think he got it bang on. And I think he grew into it a little bit. I think it's the fairest way to kind of assess it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. Most people's criticism seems to be around the fighting. Just before we do that, yeah. Going into it, as I said, I'm the same as Chris. After Daredevil, Iron Fist was the one I most looked forward to. I don't actually rate Jessica Jones as that great a character. She doesn't really do anything for me. And Luke Cage is good, and the show was great, but as a character, I'd not really had as much exposure to him as I had to Iron Fist, so I was more anticipating that. Whereas Rory, you were more anticipating it just because Marvel Netflix do really good series and you were just hoping it would deliver a new character for you.
Well, yeah, to an extent, exactly that. I mean, it's one of those things that you kind of, you're itching to get towards the Defenders because, you know,
that's when
everyone,
shit's going to go down, basically.
Well, exactly. And also, you've got to say that, you know, the Avengers is obviously incredible as a film, and when they kind of bring all the characters together. And, you know, if they'd done a standalone movie or TV series for each of the characters, would some of them have been more exciting than others? Yeah, of course they would have been. Do you know what I mean? Because some of the characters are more interesting. Some of the storylines are more interesting. You know, Daredevil with the Punisher was always going to be incredible. But Jessica Jones as a standalone, you know, she doesn't bring that much to the table. Do you know what I mean? But it's when they maybe get them together that you start to get a little bit of fireworks. And
yeah.
And I think we've said that with Rosario Dawson's character. She's the one that kind of binds it all together. Again in this one, and it's when you get those characters together that it really starts to come off. But I think watching this and Luke Cage and stuff, I didn't quite realise how good Charlie Cox was. I think that's yeah. what's brought it around for me a little bit. But yeah. I always thought he was a good actor, but I think he just hits it perfectly. But you know, you want to see more of him with those other characters. I think what held, you know, Jessica Jones a little bit higher, other than incredible David Tennant's, you know, performance as the villain, he was just amazing, was when Luke Cage was involved. Do you know what I mean? And they started to show some signs. And I think that's why everyone's itching for the Defenders, because I think they're going to get it right. It's just like when everyone was ready for the Avengers, really. It's the same kind of thing. So Luke Cage, because it's last, I think a lot of expectations are on its shoulders, and I think it might have fallen a bit flat of what people wanted, because it's not quite, well, it's not Daredevil, and I think that's what people want.
Sadly, yeah, it does struggle, doesn't it? And you can sort of see why, because out of the four of them, Iron Fist and Daredevil are the two closest, because they're more martial arts, aren't they? You're going to get a lot more out of their stunts, whereas Luke Cage and Jessica Jones are both hard hitters. You know, you're not going to see them doing backflips and all kinds of crazy stuff. It's just a lot more conventional punching, kicking and throwing. So it's obviously a lot harder. But the biggest criticism, as I was saying, seems to have been around the fight scenes. And when you listen to Finn Jones talk about it, it doesn't look like they put anywhere near as much prep into these scenes as they did with Daredevil. Because he said sometimes he would come in the morning and he would be told, right, we're shooting this scene, and it would be a whole new martial arts style or a whole new move, something that he's never done. and he would have literally 20 minutes to prepare, and then they were rolling. And it would be different if it was coming from somebody who had done martial arts their entire life. But when you're talking to somebody who's presumably has never really done it before this role, that's going to be really, really hard to expect him to just all of a sudden switch on the martial arts.
Yeah, and that was very disappointing because, I mean, coming from Daredevil, where you have these incredible, incredible fights, and you have the hallway fight and all, and the staircase fight, and it's all very, like, very in-depth, and you feel the punches and you roll with them. And then you go do something like Iron Fist, where it just feels like, wasn't as well choreographed. It feels like they were very, in just the filming of it, it just feels like they were trying to take attention away from the fight scenes. And I mean, they did have a couple of good ones. I mean, the one where he fights the Triads and then goes into the elevator, that was one of the better fight scenes. And the drunken
fellow was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, so like those were good ones, but then the others, it just feels like they're distracting away from the actual fighting to like sort of add different elements to it. So that's where the series sort of fell flat for me, and that's what I was excited about at the beginning. So yeah, that was a bit of a disappointment for me overall.
And I think a lot of people, I don't know if you follow him, Ben Beef on Twitter, good lad.
Yeah.
One of his biggest criticisms throughout the whole thing was, show me Kun Lun. Don't just mention it in passing. I want to see Kun Lun. You've shown me the plane crash. You've drip fed me these little tiny pipette fulls of it. Show me like the square of it. Show me him being led in. Show me him training in one of the dojos or something like that. And I don't criticize it that much because I am overly optimistic about these things, but that was annoying. When you're talking about the mystical cities and all this stuff, to not just show it until literally the last episode was a little bit.
And then they don't show it.
And then they don't.
Show it not being not.
you just see the fucking empty hole where it should be.
And, how are you supposed to care about this place? You haven't ever seen it.
Yeah.
And then when you finally do, it's just not there.
It's disjointed, isn't it? I mean, you wouldn't care about Gotham City if you never saw it. If every time you saw Batman, he was indoors, you wouldn't care about Metropolis if Superman was always somewhere else. You've got to care, like exactly as you say, you've got to see the thing to care about it. So
it's like the budget didn't stretch far enough, you know?
Maybe that's it.
It felt like they were hinting at it all the time, but then just fell short of actually following through with it.
Because it's like we didn't get to see the dragon. I thought we would see just maybe a 15 to 20 second recap of him plunging his fist into the dragon's heart to become the Iron Fist. You know,
but we didn't. But then wasn't there also that one scene where he alludes to the fact that it wasn't what he was expecting? But like that's when he said that in the I can't remember what episode it was, but when he said that, I thought like maybe it wasn't a dragon, it was something else that he had to face.
I think it was near the end. It was when he was fighting with when he was having the conflict with Davos. I think
Davos. Yeah.
Davos asked him about it, and yeah, he sort of did say that it was an anticlimax. But maybe, as Rory said, it might just be budget.
It felt like that. I mean, it genuinely felt like that. It felt like they can green some mountains, but they can't build
in
monastery
a city.
Know what I mean? Or a city or whatever they're aiming
for. Or
towards.
Even just part of it. Just like you say, just the monastery.
It felt very strange, actually. I mean, you know, it did feel a little bit strange because, you know, the one thing about the series as a whole is that New York is the backdrop for you know, it's the bulk of it. Yeah, the bulk of it. And not just this series, obviously Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. And that, you know, that's what they're, you know, it's the gritty part of the city. It's what they're aiming for. Whereas this is obviously centered around New York, but it's in the backdrop of what he's learned elsewhere. But they never got to that point. And that's what, that was one element that frustrated me. And also, like you said, his martial arts training looked frankly terrible because I think he got better, but I think he was shown up a lot of the time. I think the best fight he was involved with is the one with the drunken master kind of technique. When they were, did they go to China? I think they did, didn't they?
Yeah. Did you not like the hallway
scene? Yeah, that was outside
scene?
The hand.
Yeah.
The hallway scene when he first really showed his skills, that was one of my favourites.
I didn't think I thought it was a good hallway scene, but it wasn't the hallway scene.
No, it wasn't up to Daredevil's threat.
No,
the
exactly.
The whole thing just felt like 1 minute he's a good fighter and the next he's getting shown up by someone and then the next moment he's good again. That just felt very disjointed.
See, I think that whole struggle with his...
It's with his power, isn't it?
Yeah, he was struggling.
It's what Chris said before, though, with the about the costume. He's clearly, it's almost like he isn't the Iron Fist. He's the Iron Fist in training or the Iron Fist in waiting.
Yeah,
but he completely is. You're right. Yeah, you're completely right. I think what we've been kind of lucky to witness really is we've had the second series of Daredevil, so you kind of forget about the early Daredevil where
he's a more complete
getting his ass
hero,
kicked all the time. Well, he's getting his ass kicked at the beginning though. Do you know what I mean? He's got broken bones and bruised ribs and cracked ribs and all the rest.
That first fight scene, the one where he's fighting in the rain, you get seven shades of shit knocked out of him, and he's pretty much dead. And Jessica Jones, obviously, we didn't see this, but she's been a hero before, so she knows the game.
Yeah.
Whereas exactly. and the other thing is, he's the youngest out of the bunch. So he's not a kid, but I'm sure he must be something like early 20s. So he's struggling with this a lot more than the rest of them are. And without wanting to just put the rose-tinted glasses on, that's the way I chose to look at it, was he struggles with it because he hasn't quite got it.
Yeah.
Big test.
Yeah, I get you, man. Yeah.
You can also look at it from the angle, like he's been in Kunlun his whole life. That's where he's trained. So like he's facing a lot different styles that he's used to.
Yeah.
A lot of different people that he's not used to, and fighting a lot more, I guess, than he's used to. So maybe that's sort of part of it.
But it would be a bit dishonest to say that it looks deliberate that they've done that, because it does. It might be maybe a happy coincidence, but the litmus test is going to be season two. They've got to have worked on this, and the poor guy's got to have an absolute ton of martial arts training to make sure that when they drop a new thing on him, he's prepared and he can do it.
Yeah, but to give him his dues, man, as Danny Rand, I thought he was great.
He was great, because I was sceptical, because I thought, well, he was a bit shit in Game of Thrones. I didn't really like him.
Was he in Game of Thrones again?
He was Renly Baratheon's gay lover, wasn't he?
Oh, he was, wasn't he?
He was, Loras Tyrell. He was Marjorie's brother.
Yeah.
So
they're quite obsessed with British actors in these parts, aren't they?
Because I always forget that Charlie Cox is bloody English.
Yeah, very much
He's incredibly English. So that sort of segues into the next section, which I've put down as casting problems, because the guy that was cast as the drunken, whatever, the drunken ninja, the drunken hand guy,
so cool.
He was supposedly in the running to play Danny Rand. And there's been a lot of people, there was a lot of articles I read that were complaining, saying, well, why didn't he get the role, and accusing it of being whitewashed. And I tried as much as I can to shut people down over that, because Danny Rand...
Because Danny Rand was born in New York to white parents.
He is a white man. It would have been more offensive if all of a sudden you go, well, only Asian people can do martial arts. You know, it's like we said with the ancient one in Doctor Strange. Sometimes people get a little bit too precious over things, and sometimes it's with good merit and other times it's not. And this is one of those occasions when it's completely off, because he might have been 10 out of 10 for the martial arts scenes, but there is absolutely no way that he could have stood there and pretended to have been the child of two upper class white New Yorkers. It wouldn't have worked at all. And it's sad that it comes down to that, because what people should be focusing on is that guy did an incredible job. The style that he was fighting with, where he looked like he was going to fall over, it reminded me of when Kanu played for Arsenal. Whenever Kanu dribbled, he always looked like he was going to fall over. But then he'd do a couple of step overs and nutmeg someone, and you're going, he meant to do that. He actually did that on purpose. And that's what that fight scene was like. He looked like he was going to fall flat on his face. And all the while he's fighting, he's clutching that terracotta pot full of wine. Yeah. It was incredible.
Yeah, the ancient art of Nwankwo Kanu martial arts. Yeah, yeah, it's passed down from generations and generations of Nigerian monks.
And the dialogue was good as well between them, because he was really giving him a load of shit, wasn't he? He was really trying to get under his skin.
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch a lot of martial arts films, but that technique is one that is known to be very difficult to do.
And that whole scene felt like... that whole scene felt like a proper old school kung fu movie. Like,
yeah, it did. Yeah, it did.
It had shades of like 70s.
It had shades of early kind of era. Bruce Lee kind of martial arts, and it was ace. It was really really cool. I thought, you know, talking about casting problems, but I suppose we can talk about the good things in it.
Oh, absolutely.
What's the name that plays? His love interest and the martial arts.
Jessica Henwick.
Yeah, she was just perfect casting.
She was brilliant. She was the best thing in it.
I'd still argue...
you're going to say Rosario Dawson, aren't you?
I'm going to say Rosario Dawson. But she only because, oh my God, Rosario Dawson is the best thing in these whole... things or
let's be honest,
why I love her for it, because I just think without her I thought she lifted Luke Cage way above what it was at times, and I thought she was the same with this at times, but I do think, you know, as Colleen Wing, you know, Jessica was just perfectly cast, and I think with her fight scenes, I think she's clearly either trained
one level higher.
She's definitely a level higher, because she was the one that was supposed to be a level lower than him. In the series, that's what it was implying. But her scenes were just great, and I thought she really... I just thought she had a really good kind of warmth to her character. I thought she had some really good intrigue. I think you kind of want to know... You wanted to know more about her. I mean, and I think she lifted the whole thing when she was on screen, really. And I think it did suffer without her. I think the scenes, albeit it was quite interesting between the Meachums and Danny Rand, but I think when she was around it definitely, she took it to a kind of next level, really.
Yeah.
And her fight scenes in the cage early on were
brilliant.
Those were really well done. And then actually linking to another character that I quite like, Bakudo. The fight scene in the rain with her sword.
Yeah. Her sword play was brilliant. From following her online, she did an incredible amount of katana training, because it was obviously well written that her shtick was going to be she was always going to have the sword. Sometimes she didn't. Very often she used it sheathed, didn't she? Because she wasn't wanting to gut people. But
damage,
she did a lot of work over the preceding months with the katana, and you could see she looked so comfortable. Wielding something that it must be uncomfortable having a fight scene, and you've got, because they are quite heavy, big two-handed blade, and she just looked like, you know, she was born to carry it.
I don't know her physical height and stature, but she didn't seem like a huge kind of
she
looks dainty and small, and I thought that's what was so effective, because you saw her wielding the sword the way she did, and she was just amazing. That sword work. I mean, like I said, I don't watch tons and tons of martial arts, but you don't need to see if someone's capable or not, because she could do it in full flow. And I think that's the thing with, you can't speed things up. You can't fake it. If someone can use a sword properly, you'll see it in with your two eyes, and she was just the sword scenes were just amazing. I thought she was brilliant. I genuinely did. I think she's the best thing about the series, and I think the best new thing in the series. Do you know what I mean? And I think she's the one that, I don't know. I hope she has more to offer in the Defenders if that happens, and obviously in the second series of this when it comes to pass.
And did you know that she was in Game of Thrones as well?
I thought she might have been. I think I heard. What was she in?
She was Nymeria Sand. She was one of Oberyn Martell's daughters.
I thought I recognised her from... Yeah, and is she the one with the spear, or is she one...
I think she was the one with the whip. I'm not sure.
Okay.
but she had one of the more vocal parts, and she was
she the one that was flirting with oh God, what's his name?
I'm not sure. I can't remember without actually going and looking, which I won't do. And she was also in The Force Awakens. She was an X-wing pilot. So she's only 24.
Brownie points.
So by the age of 24, she's been in a Netflix series, a Star Wars film, and Game of Thrones. So she's not doing bad for a 24-year-old Brit, is she?
No, it was Bronn. I thought she might have been the one that was flirting with Bronn.
She might have been. I can't remember because that was the really foul-mouthed one.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't her. Yeah, the Game of Thrones is like a rite of passage for all these actors, isn't it?
I see why, because it gets you into a very sort of dramatic universe, doesn't it? It's a show that's very much deals with combat and violence and...
Yeah, exactly.
It's a whole different world to being on like a show that's on 7 o'clock on a Friday night, because it's a little bit more prime time, a little bit more adult themed.
Do you know what this had kind of reminders of, Stu? And you'll relate to this. I'm not sure if Chris watches it, but it's got a touch of The Arrow about it. This series I saw.
Yeah.
I thought the flashbacks were kind of the poorer kind of Arrow flashbacks, you know, when it didn't quite nail, you know, maybe the Russian
when
stories.
It's not showing you the bits of the flashbacks that you want to see, which is the really grueling, harrowing bits. It's the boring narrative.
It's showing the kind of dull bits that form the character but don't form what you want of the character. Do you know what I mean? So it had a touch of that, because again, it's kind of rich kid, not quite lost his parents, but different story in such, but it does have similarities. I feel like it's taken more from that end of the TV spectrum than the Marvel TV spectrum, because it's not as violent, you know, and it had elements of violence at times and you needed it, but it didn't really hit certainly the way Daredevil did, and it didn't hit the kind of darker undertones of Jessica Jones, which for its lack of violence had all those deep messages about rape and everything else and that we talked about, you know. So I don't know, it didn't quite have that edge, do you know what I mean? And I think it was a bit
vanilla.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And the last one I wanted to mention was Tom Pelfrey, who played Ward Meacham. I really like him, because I've only ever really seen him in Banshee, and he was brilliant in that, playing a reformed neo-Nazi turned small-town police officer. And he did a brilliant job in this. He was really...
He played a really good junkie in this, actually, I'll be honest.
He played a really good junkie,
and I think he was... It was good because you kind of felt like he was a villain for a period. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the way they did the Meacham brother and sister, like, they set up Ward to be the bad guy for the whole show, and then towards the end, they start flipping it around, and then he's actually the one who's sort of Danny's friend rather than Joy, who we see setting up.
And he's living under his dad's thumb, isn't he? Even when his dad is living in isolation away from the world, he's still controlling him and living his life for him and telling him what a disappointment he is. But I loved him. I really liked him.
I did think he was the stronger one of the family. I mean, David Wenham, who plays Harold, he's a pretty well-known actor.
He kind of pissed me off a little bit.
How annoying.
Yeah, he was just a weird portrayal of an actor, of a character. The whole when he was resurrected and then suddenly kind of went quite extremely nice, but had that really weird, you know, dark impulse to kill people.
He had the whole twitchy thing going on, didn't he? But I don't think he pulled it off very well.
Just a strange approach to it. And I think you've got to put that down to direction as much as anything else, because, you know, that's the director trying to get it out of the actor, what you can get out of him. And I just didn't think they got the character particularly right in that. And then, you know, I think saying that she is going to go on and be a villain of some sort, Joy didn't really have that edge.
I was disappointed by that because they've swapped around, I think, from the comics. They've messed around with what happens with the Meachams to make it fit the TV show more.
It did feel like they tampered a little bit with the stories in that regard. It didn't. I think the early impressions of them was quite interesting, and the way they were going about it, and them controlling a business, but it quickly slipped away. I think the parts of the business that were quite interesting is the drugs were being dealt from inside the office, and the hand had a say in it, and that was quite interesting. And then, you know, our old favourite, as she would be known, she is it Wai Ching Hao, who plays Madame Gao anyway. She's always solid, man. I've always kind of liked her scenes. I think she's been interesting throughout Daredevil and this. And I think, you know, I thought her scenes were quite interesting. The scene in the house when he's going through the kind of fighting trials, that was pretty good.
Yeah, she's an interesting character because she's a big facilitator. She's a big sort of gateway to a lot of other things that are going to come afterwards.
Yeah.
And this is obviously going to lead into the Defenders very well, because I can't remember where it sits in terms of the timeline for Iron Fist, but the Defenders is meant to be a few months after the second season of Daredevil. So I think Iron Fist sort of follows on very quickly after that as well. Because
it felt like it followed on, maybe kind of overlapped a little bit.
Yeah, I think they ran concurrently and sort of like one off each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting how they kind of knit everything together. I mean, because Rosario Dawson, obviously her character always alludes back to Daredevil. I don't know if she said about Luke Cage, but there's times it's like, could you just call Daredevil? Do you know what I mean? Could you just pick up the phone? Yeah. It was a little bit like,
I mean, he fights the hand too, right? Why can't we just get his?
Yeah, you've got him on speed dial, or just WhatsApp him, or send him a GIF or something. Just get him involved, get him down here, because it just felt a little bit like there were times when you needed someone else, because they were a little bit isolated, weren't they? And their fight was quite interesting. And until kind of Davos rocks up, and God, that was a weird actor to bring, Davos. And I don't know Davos from the comics, but I think he's a
villain.
Yeah, he becomes the Steel Serpent, which is actually the little serpent on the drugs that Madame Gao sells.
Yeah.
That's his symbol when he becomes a Steel Serpent.
Okay.
So he's kind of like the anti-Iron Fist, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a very similar look, but his logo doesn't have the wings on it.
He had a similar feel to, the guy, Edgefor is the surname, but I'm not going to pronounce his first name, but the guy in Doctor Strange.
Yeah, the guy that played Mordo.
Yeah, he had a similar kind of turning character in the kind of righteous path, this is what you need to do, you know, and then suddenly goes against that because he kind of feels betrayed. Do you know what I mean?
See why, can't you? Because he's deadly loyal to Kunlun, and all he sees is a power that he thinks he deserves being wasted by somebody who's going to use it on New York. And then, of course,
which, to be fair, he's got a point.
Yeah, he does, because Danny Rand was chosen to do the trials. He won, and his mission was to protect the passage to Kunlun. So he's failed. So everything that Davos does from this point, technically, he's right in doing. But he's obviously going to go about it in a really crazy, psychotic, militant way. And that's where he becomes, hopefully, where he's going to become a good season two villain. Because then you've got friend versus friend, but it's a genuine good versus evil. You screwed me over. Yeah, well, you failed Kunlun, and it's your fault the city's disappeared.
What it was lacking a little bit is there's not much kind of nostalgia or friendship between them. Do you know what I mean? They started arguing from almost
they were quite
scene
dry.
One.
And also, as you mentioned, the flashbacks, we never see him like becoming friends with Davos. We hear him talk about it once or twice, but you never see that friendship grow. So
they were talking about donkey cart racing or something like that, and they were talking about various things, but they never really got to that friendship. And I think that's what it was lacking at times, because, you know, you go to Daredevil and you know, Charlie Cox's character, he's always got Foggy, you know, and then other relationships from there. And I mean, Jessica Jones has even got that friend who's that blonde kind of annoying reporter lady. But and Luke Cage has got, he's kind of got friends, but he's almost like an isolated figure, isn't he? So it's a little bit slightly different. And I just think the relationships they were building, I don't know, I think other than Danny Rand and, what's her name? I've just already forgotten.
Colleen
Wing.
I like their relationship. I genuinely thought at times that was good. They started to build something that was quite interesting, and obviously they're going off together in the end of the series, and that does show. Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. I thought her struggle against the hand and her background, and I thought that was quite an interesting kind of plot development, actually.
Yeah, I think that. So we've covered, I think, everything that I really wanted us to do, because we've pretty much segued there into favourite and least favourite characters. Were there any scenes that especially stood out for you, Rory, first?
I like the scenes particularly around and like the hand kind of headquarters. I thought that was pretty cool. I thought it was slightly different to what we've seen previously. I thought some of the fight scenes that were the standout kind of moments. I like the trials that he did, and then the ones within China, and anything involving the fight scenes with the cage kind of fighting style at the beginning with Colleen was really cool. But no, there's not a vast amount that really, really stands in the memory. You know, I think this perfectly enjoyable to watch, but it didn't have any really hard hitting, certainly no kind of emotional scenes that hit home in that regard, to be honest.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? Anything especially stood out for you?
I'm kind of with Rory on this one. There's no real moment like the hallway fight in Daredevil that stands out in the memory in the series. Yeah. There was nothing quite as, there wasn't a wow moment that you were just like, oh my God, what did I just watch? Let me rewind and quickly watch it again. There was nothing quite like that. In terms of scenes I quite liked the one where Danny was fighting the triads, like I mentioned, in his building and in the elevator. And the tournament he had against Madame Gao and her cronies. And then the Drunken Master one, as we mentioned, and Colleen's fight with Bakudo in the rain was one of the better fight scenes. So those were sort of ones that were all right. And then there was one where Harold gets his Madame Gao sends the cronies off to him in his house, and then they tell him about Iron Fist, and then he says, Iron Fist sounds like a sex toy. That was one funny moment that one funny moment that I can remember. But otherwise, it was nothing really that impressive.
Yeah. There was one other scene that I kind of liked is when Danny ordered a takeaway, and his view in the world of a takeaway is very different to what we would call a takeaway. So he brought in this huge kind of banquet, and then Rosario Dawson was just stealing plate upon plate and tray upon tray of all his food. I thought that was quite good because she was quite good in those scenes because she's got a kind of lightness to her character and she takes everything a little bit differently to the way they do. Do you know what I mean? Because she's involved, but
yeah, and she always seems to be a third wheel whenever there was something going on between them, rather than doing the typical thing of going, I'm just going to leave. She deliberately stays there and pushes herself right in the middle of the conversation to make it extra awkward. But as we've said, basically on every time we do a Netflix show, Rosario Dawson tends to steal almost every scene that she's in regardless. So at least they're kind of hamming that up and playing up to it and saying, well, we may as well let the A-lister have some fun.
Yeah, no, exactly. And she does have fun. You could tell. I think she had some fun in this series. And I think the same within Luke Cage. And
she was more involved in this, wasn't she? It seemed like she was in...
This would be the most she's been involved, I'd say. Because,
must be.
Because she was actually in full episodes, do you know what I mean? And it wasn't...
She was a main character.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. And I mean, with Luke Cage, she was main character within two or three episodes, and Daredevil, it was bits and pieces. Do you know what I mean? But she definitely more heavily involved in this than anything else. And maybe they looked at it and they looked at the casting and they maybe just realised that actually we've still got this person who can carry scenes. Do you know what I mean? She really is. I'm hoping she's... It's a shame she's not been cast in another role because I genuinely think... I'm not sure she can fight, but you'd like to
see... She did have a couple of ones, and then where they were in China where she grabbed the claws from one guy. She actually quite held her own in the fight scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she might be a bit more involved still.
And she talked him, didn't
she? She'd make a great Catwoman.
Yeah.
When she left right at the end, she took that... Do you know who those claw things remind me of? Is it Bronze Tiger?
Yeah, from Arrow, yeah.
Yeah, because that's what he fights with, those sort of, like, knuckle dusters with claws on the end, those brutal things.
She would, though, man. Honestly, going back to it, she'd make a great Catwoman, if they ever want to, or something along those lines.
It's got nothing at all to do with the desire to see Rosario Dawson in leather cat suit.
It's not at all, is it?
Nothing at all.
Chris is excited about that.
Perish
so,
of thought.
It might be slightly to do with that,
okay.
But you know, but
a bit of honesty.
She would be though, man. She'd be. I genuinely think you could see her cast in a bigger role in the Marvel kind of universe.
It wouldn't be a surprise because she's shown that she can hold her own in the superhero universe, and we saw her in Sin City, and she wasn't
You
know, she wasn't playing like a passive character there. She was a leader. She was violent as hell. You know, she's got
she's a foul mouth.
She's
great in that film.
She was, we talked about that. She's really, really good. So the only other thing, really, I think we've probably already alluded to it. In terms of the Defenders, where does this fit in? So we've obviously got all the members have been introduced. Now, we've got the four key members. We've got the Punisher, who I don't know if he's going to be in it in any capacity.
I think he might be, but only limited capacity, is my gut feeling.
Yeah, then we've got the supporting cast. So we've got Karen Page and Foggy. We've got the police, the detective from Luke Cage.
Oh, I can't remember her name, but
I can't remember her name, but Misty Knight. Yeah, she's possibly going to be in it. We've then got Colleen Wing possibly is going to be in it. Now, there's a lot of supporting cast could potentially turn up in the Defenders. We know it's going to be, it's basically them against the Hand now, isn't it? They're very much going for the mystical approach. We've got Elektra to come back because...
Hogarth will probably be in it as well.
Hogarth.
Carrie-Anne Moss, I honestly, again, underused. I know there's not always a lot of scope for it, but she's great when she's on screen.
It is difficult to use her, isn't it? Because it must be difficult in
she's
these kind
lawyer.
Of things to think, how the hell can we get a lawyer in? And they were clever with the way they did it. Of him, you know, his
she was good with Danny. She was interesting. Yeah, she was good, man. I'm sure she's in a limited capacity, but I think she's always great when she's on screen as well. She's pretty high level, and she obviously maybe doesn't want to commit to it being a lead. It's not really her. She's done all that's been and gone, you know. But I think she's great when she's on screen as well.
Yeah, and she was good when she was with Danny because she was one of the only people that wasn't really overawed with him. A lot of people were like, you know, oh, Mr. Rand, and she was just like, okay, whatever. Well, I'm on the clock, so you can do whatever you want. And you know,
she's more like put him in his place, really.
Yeah,
you know?
she doesn't suffer fools gladly, does she?
She treats him like the boy that she knew. Do you know what I mean? All kind of. She didn't treat him in the same capacity. No, she was good.
Yeah.
So we're all set up now. The next thing that we'll be getting from Marvel Netflix will be the Defenders.
God, I hope it's good. I hope it's as good as it can be. Because
the worrying thing is a lot of people, I think that Iron Fist has now dampened expectations, but that could be a good thing because then it could make it that little bit better. If your expectations drop a little bit and then if it does deliver, it feels like more of a high, doesn't it? Whereas if you go into something expecting it to be amazing and it's not, you always feel a little bit let down.
I think for me, I think as long as they get the chemistry between the main actors right, I think the fight scenes could be really exciting. I think the one thing, you know, I don't know who's directing it and I don't often pay a lot of attention to TV directors and it might be a little bit harsh, but it's often a case of you've got a showrunner and then you've got different directors per episode and it's quite difficult to kind of ascertain who's doing what. But I think with Daredevil, particular leads and in terms of direction, and it'd be nice if they're the ones that are involved in doing the Defenders, because I think of all the ones you've seen, they were the best directed. Do you know what I mean? They were best scripted as well, but certainly the best directed.
Yeah, I think that's fair comment. If you had four teams all coming together, you'd think that Daredevil would be the ones that are sort of expected to step forward and say, right, you follow our lead. Because they've done twice as many episodes. You know, they've
done twice as many, and they produced the highest caliber TV show. I think that's fair to say. I think series one was excellent. I think it's brilliant. I think series two is just outstanding. And I think
Daredevil's an easy character to introduce. You are talking about a blind martial artist superhero. It's not like, you know, it's pretty hard to follow as it is. So they've done a really good job putting that character across, making him believable, making you care about him. Because I think everyone that watches it really, really feels the struggles of Matt Murdock, because he's got the classic, hasn't he?
It's the acting, man. He's just been brilliant.
Charlie Cox has been outstanding. He really has.
And I think we you know, when we discussed the second series a lot, you talked about the other characters stepping up. Karen Page, you know, the guy who plays Foggy, they all did in that second series. You know, they all found maybe another gear. And I think what you don't remember is that, well, you might do, but things like Jessica Jones and Iron Fist probably need a second series. Do you know what I mean? They probably need to develop into those characters a little bit further.
They're not as rounded off, are they? Daredevil got his first season to become the Daredevil of Hell's Kitchen.
The second season
was him existing as the Daredevil, whereas Jessica Jones, she had that really big cliffhanger. She was really up in the air. And Iron Fist, as we've sort of said, he hasn't really, truly embraced being the Iron Fist. You could
Luke
say the
Cage,
same for Luke
however,
Cage. However,
I think Luke Cage is one of the more established in terms of because his powers aren't,
it's not that profound, is it?
It's strength. It's proper strength, you know. So that's his major asset, being a human machine. You know, he's bulletproof. So, well, almost. But you know, it's different with him because you got to see Daredevil kind of owning his kind of skills and developing that way. And you've had that across two series.
Yeah.
I think you've not seen that with Jessica Jones. And the issue for me with her is she's previously been a superhero, which they've always alluded to and talked about, but you've never seen any of it. And she gets knocked out by a flimsy piece of wood.
A piece of wood off the back of the head, which is just horrific.
And that's the problem, because there won't be these plot holes in Defenders. There won't be those errors, I don't believe. But you just got to see, how the hell does Jessica Jones fight up against two martial artists and a strongman? For me, I don't know, Chris, you can give some insight in the comics if it makes sense that way.
For me, it feels like with Jessica Jones and Iron Fist, at the end of their respective first seasons, feels like they're only now, at the end of the season, taking their steps to becoming the superheroes that we know them to be. So they sort of like only now at the part where we joined Matt Murdock at the start of his season one. So whereas Luke Cage and Matt Murdock, sort of by the end of their first seasons, they become Luke Cage and Daredevil, like we know them. So it feels like they've been in different stages of their character development.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's strange, isn't it, that it's so much harder to develop certain characters within the same universe, within the same sort of time scale. But ultimately, we'll know what's going to happen. It's not going to be that far away. I mean, it's 4 months to the day that it comes out. And with all the films we've got in between, that is just going to fly by. One other thing that's going to be interesting with the Defenders is the last we saw of Luke Cage, he's in prison. So presumably we'll get maybe a little catch up on the legal challenge, because they obviously, the guy that was playing chess in the salon, he now had the evidence to prove that Luke was innocent.
He was innocent, yeah.
So he will have spent some time in prison, but now he comes out, he's got a clean slate, he's got the reputation behind him because everybody saw him take down Diamondback.
Yeah.
And what I'm really interested in is how they all get introduced. And the logical thing is it's got to be done through Claire. Claire has got to be the one that sits them all down and says, I happen to know four people who have all got powers. You should really do something about this. Whether she will or not, I'm sure we'll find out in the next 4 months.
We will.
But
we will.
But I think that's, we can call that our take on Iron Fist. Hope you've enjoyed listening to it. As always, please do reply to us either on Facebook or on Twitter with your comments, with your favourites, least favourites, what have you. Before we go, Chris, is there anything that you need to promote or pimp out or sell? Have you got a book on the shelves or anything at the minute?
No, not really. I've been quite quiet on Twitter in the last couple of months, so having a bit of a dark period on the net. So yeah, I don't really have anything.
Okay, well, as we've said, you will be coming on, assuming we can get our calendars all synced up. You'll be on the next couple to do Guardians, which will be amazing fun. And thank you so much for coming on with us now, because it's a little bit later for us than it is for us. So it's basically your bedtime now.
Yeah, so, I'm going straight to bed.
Excellent. We appreciate you staying up. Anything for you, Rory? Anything that you need to promote?
No, I've been lazy as hell, to be honest. I've not been well for the last few weeks, so I haven't done any football pods or any movie pods or recently any comic pods except Logan that we did before. So I would like to, you can talk about our Facebook page if you like, that'd be nice in a second. And yeah, just keep interacting with us, keep shouting out to us. We always like inspiration and ideas. We know we're covering quite familiar ground, I'd say. I mean, bar the really weird calls for us doing anime and those kind of comics.
Which aren't going to happen, to be perfectly
never
honest.
In a million years. But if there's anything people want us to cover that maybe we haven't and we could read and get into, I'm for that. That's always good. And we are looking to get some kind of newer guests on and maybe do these a little bit more regularly when we can, but work-life balance and kids and everything else gets in the way at the time. So,
and dogs.
Dogs. I was going to say dogs. Kids for you is a dog, but yeah, same thing in your eyes. Mate.
Wilson so. Still counts. He can hear you. You'll hurt his feelings. It's okay.
I hope not.
The Facebook page has been reactivated.
Good guns.
6,500 likes on that page somehow. I think Gags has basically sold us out to the KGB and the Yakuza, but it's working, so long may it continue. we've got the usual... you can find us on Facebook. It's AI Comic Pod. There's only one of them. We've also got the aicomicpod.co.uk, which just redirects you to the main Anfield Index site.
Some great articles always on there. Honestly, I know people don't always read these things, and I know a lot of people take time to read football and various other sources, but Joey does some incredible work on that. And if you want to learn more and you want to develop more and stuff, that's a good way. So we might start, I'm not sure, there's things we've got ideas for. I do think if there's any kind of comics people want to read, then we should maybe start putting that out in our pods as well as maybe online and just giving some recommendations and stuff. But we'll maybe come to that soon.
Well, that's something Joey and I have discussed. We're due another DC Rebirth line to look at probably Batman, seeing as we did Aquaman last time. Latest article from Joey is a really big, meaty piece about Cable. Which I think everyone should be reading because there's some really
perfect
good background
timing.
In there. There's also a really good piece he did about X-23, obviously following on from Logan, and then he did a really good Logan movie review. I think that'll do. So, as always, thanks for listening, thanks for your time, and we'll see you next time.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult. And that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.